Welcome to the Atom Ventures podcast. I'm with Saoirse Lorimer from Trace.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well too. So we're going to be talking about Trace, the business. What does it do? Privacy by design, a bit in GDPR, and also how businesses can protect their data, manage their risk and compliance when it comes to data out there in the big bad world. So do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and Trace itself?
Sure. And thank you for having me. So I come from a very creative and entrepreneurial family, so I think that's probably influenced where I am today. So I was born in a household where I was helping my mum's business from a very young age, helping her run events. But then my professional life, I went to agency, so I was working in digital agency, managing developers, managing designers, looking at the client requirements and then mapping that back. I then moved to corporate side. So I worked in a large financial organization where I was global head of digital. And that was an interesting move because I was very much poacher turned gamekeeper. So I started off in digital marketing, moved to IT and then to information security, and then moved back to brand. So that kind of multi-perspective really informed the way I think about Trace now. It's bringing together different areas.
So what does Trace do exactly?
So Trace is a software, but we also have professional services. So we help businesses find, locate, and visualize the data that matters. We do that in the most simple and easy and engaging and guided way possible. So we hide the complexity of the legislation behind the scenes. So it's very much about a guided view about helping you surface where that personal data is in your business. You then are able to see where the gaps and the risks are in terms of legal bases, or do you not have a data processing agreement in place? And then you can visualize that to then help you make good decisions as a business.
So I was going to ask, actually, when you say data that matters, how do you know what data matters?
Well, the GDPR, and there's obviously lots of other data protection regulations around the globe, but obviously this is setting a new bar, the GDPR. The GDPR focuses on the personal data. And there's a subset within that, so there's obviously special category data which needs extra protection. So then, again, that will be guided through the process of going through Trace. So that is the data that matters to us, but there's also high-risk data, so financial transactional data that matters to business. So we live in a big data economy, so there's a hell of a lot of data out there, and it can be overwhelming. So it's about kind of focusing on what do you need to protect first and putting the person at the heart of the story of the information.
So I mean, there was a lot of talk about GDPR obviously back in May when May last year. It's a year now, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
It's almost a year.
Yeah.
There was a lot of hype, and then that kind of hype died down. I think around May time, everything before the deadline, there were hundreds and hundreds of events, and now I don't seem to see so much around that. So is that job done? Are all the businesses now compliant? I mean, what are you seeing out there in the market?
So I didn't really enjoy that hype. I mean, it was there was a lot of work to be doing. There was a lot of phone calls being made at that time, if you're a privacy professional like myself. But the hype probably caused a lot of bad decisions too. There were GDPR programs that cost too much money, that were over-engineered, that were based on surveys and very qualitative and actually not getting to the heart of the data. There was knee-jerk reactions. There was too much focus on the tactics. So there was emails that were sent out demanding consent when perhaps it's a different legal basis required. So there was that sense of absolute panic. So I don't think that was necessarily helpful, but it's good to have privacy in the spotlight more generally. And what we're seeing again is it's going in waves. So it's coming back into the global spotlight again. I saw 25th of May 2018 as the start date, and what we're seeing is a shift in the way that privacy is considered around the globe.
I guess you're talking about Facebook there and all the big social media giants, right? So, but I guess from my perspective, really, when you're looking at talking to small businesses, they understand GDPR and they need to do something about it, but there's a lot of confusion still around it. So as much of that confusion, as in what is a legal basis, what do you need to protect, do you need to have consent for everything, has that kind of been settled out now? Are the experts now a little bit more in consensus of what needs to be done? Because at the very beginning there wasn't that much consensus on what you really need to do. Have things kind of smoothed out?
Yeah, I think that's there was a slowness to the Information Commissioner's Office and guidance on it, which is that kind of taking a very kind of complex, nuanced piece of legislation. There was, you know, it's very long as well, so it's very nuanced, and that's what happens. You have to take legislation, you have to interpret it for the real world, you have to live it, you have to live it through case law, as it were. So that is to be expected when you're looking at a new law. But yeah, I think there was the guidance which came out from the ICO and others was a little bit slow in coming. So people were kind of, there was a bit of guessing, even if you're an expert in it. So it did cause some confusion. Has it all been settled out? No, because I think it takes years for case law to kind of really iron out and it to sort of settle and embed in. But where we are now, I think, is a nicer, more rational place, because we're more lifting up to privacy by design, to principles over pedantics. And you know, people understand that if they want to embed compliance in the business, then it's not about the devil, you know, it's not about all of the detail of the time, it's about can you get the principle right, because there's a lot to stay on top of GDPR. It goes into almost every facet of the organization, so to get it 100% right all of the time across your people, process, technology is impossible. So it's, you know, it's like security, there isn't 100%. But if you can shift your culture to which embraces the principle of it, I think then you're going to get it right.
So you mentioned privacy by design. What do you mean by that?
So it's not my term.
No.
It's a term by a lady called Anne Kevorkian. But yeah, I think it's a very nice way of describing that, how you think about design thinking. So user design thinking. How can you think about privacy or protecting data from the outset of a project? So if you're moving to a new CRM, so you know, are you vetting that CRM or the cloud vendor for how they protect the data, for data security, for their standards? How seriously do they take data security as a business? What would happen if there were a breach? So doing all that thinking from the outset of a product or a project, and then really putting the human at the heart of the picture. So this is personal data, it's about individuals. So thinking about, well, how can we protect that data? Because if it gets, if it's lost or it's breached, then it's going to have impacts on individuals. So I see it as a facet of user-centered design, which I'm very passionate about.
So how does Trace get involved? I mean, how do you use Trace to help build privacy by design culture within the business? What kind of, it's a tool. I guess what I'm asking is how to describe that tool a bit more and how it can help businesses remain compliant.
Yeah, so the first thing to acknowledge is it is a tool. It's really useful. It gives you a very good surface of, you know, what are the gaps and the risks, and then how can we take an action on this. But it's not the answer to everything. There is no magic bullet. You know, it's a multifaceted approach. So in terms of helping you stay on top of understanding those gaps and where does your data flow and visualizing that, Trace is a really useful tool. But to get it right and embed privacy by design thinking into your culture, you're going to need to do training. You need to kind of lead from the front in terms of, you know, sort of role modeling the best practice as a leader. You know, you need to think about the daily practices of what, you know, when what people do when they're sending emails or, you know, interacting with clients or working with customers. So it touches on so many things, but it's just one part of that picture.
So when you go into a business now, and obviously are, because you have Trace as a product, but you're also consulting as well. So when you're going into a business, how do you start that conversation? How do you begin to push that company through the process of really understanding what data they have and being careful with it? And again, like you said, which I think is very interesting, is that a lot of projects run within businesses and people tend to kind of drop the compliance or the GDPR aspect by the wayside because they're more focused on the results of what that product can do. Mm-hmm. So how do you as a business help other companies through that journey?
Yeah, I always start any kind of good piece of consultancy, professional services starts with listening. So there's a discovery phase. So you're understanding, you're finding where the data is, by questions which are, you know, which again Trace can help you then uncover it and surface it.
So it's just to step in there. So is Trace, how do you actually use the product Trace? Do you because it's obviously a cloud based platform? Mm-hmm. Does someone go in and then connect to their internal systems with it, or how does that?
So our first version, Trace Comply, is not about connecting into their data system.
Right.
So it's metadata. So we're not having a replication of the individual personal data. So there's a security and privacy by design thinking there. But it's the it's about understanding your categories of data, which is what you need to evidence for Article 30 of GDPR, for example. Right. And then it helps you understand where the overall flow of data is. So that can work. You can do that yourself through Trace. So it's designed to, you know, be your data coach that's going through it and giving you lots of guidance and lots of content there. Or you can, if you need a little bit extra help, you can use professional services, or, you know, you might have a really great DPO or data compliance lead in your business that, that uses the tool and the person. So it's like, it's designed to be a complement. But yeah, it starts with either from the tool or through professional services, it starts with discovery and getting that baseline to then mature things.
And then do you guys, from that, give coaching to those people within the organisation of how they should really manage that and champion that within the organisation?
Absolutely. I am a qualified coach, and I've found that really useful. Because you're, you know, it's those open questions, and it's about tuning in, and it's about understanding where that business is, rather than forcing a, here's how you're going to do privacy by design, and here's how it's a brand opportunity, and then it just becomes window dressing of something that they just jump on as a term that, you know, that's going to grab them a good brand message. It's got to be true. It's like anything with the brand piece. It's got to actually reflect what practice they do. So I'm not a believer in endless pages and reams of dusty policy documents that no one reads. It's about getting something which is quite succinct and then becomes real in an organisation. So you have to kind of keep reiterating it through lots of communications.
That's actually quite an interesting point, because I know that through businesses I've been in, we've had to create a lot of policy and procedure documents, and they're great first off, but then they do, after 2 years, become out of date, right? And it's quite a chore to actually then update them. And of course, you've got the processes in place to make sure people read them and when they're onboarding, but it can be quite a big task to keep things updated. So, you know, how are you helping businesses understand that as they grow and they manage maybe more customers' data, different territories, you know, that they need to keep an eye on this, and how do you make it easy for them to be compliant?
The first thing is connecting those documents. So, you know, having lots of Word versions and version control and Excel sheets, you know, it's really old fashioned, and in compliance is an area which is ripe for disruption, because you've got that, you know, that area of these disconnected documents, when actually everything comes back to your data map or your model of your data, and everything should be connected. So that's the philosophy at the heart of it. So connecting it and streamlining things helps. But it's also then, it's really doing a bit of an education to say that, you know, don't take a template, a legal template, and rework it. Start with understanding what data you have, and then keep it simple. Because privacy, fair processing notices, terms and conditions are all supposed to be easy to read, and it's far from empathetic if they're not. So thinking about, again, that human-centered approach about the reader that's going to be consuming that and trying to understand the other side. So yeah, I think that's key. And in terms of the policy, having been in a large organization, worked through very detailed policies, and then you'd speak to people, you'd train them on it, and they'd kind of forgotten what you said or hadn't read it. So then I think we need to be now looking at different ways of bringing policies to life, whether it's video or, you know, making it nice and short, a nice handbook, an ethos which is all stitched together. So just making your material engaging, I think, is really important. And whether you're a large organisation or small, that matters.
So what are the main challenges you see for different organisations at different stages? We talked a little bit before the podcast about, you know, how large organisations can benefit a lot with Trace, simply because it optimises certain areas. But then for startups, a lot of them aren't thinking about, well, they are thinking about GDPR, obviously, but they're not necessarily thinking about a tool or to help them. So how would you kind of sell to those different categories of business?
So, yeah, I think I've designed it with both in mind. So if you simply want to have a handle on where your data is, to, you know, so that you can sleep at night, and if the worst case does happen, or so that you know, this is the basics of having a fair processing notice which is accurate and which is on your website. So if you're doing contact us on your website, you're collecting data, you need that, and it needs to be accurate. So that's the basic. So you can use Trace for that. If you're a larger organization, this could be a smaller piece in a more complicated ecosystem. So it might be that you have a lot of, you know, legacy systems and it's terribly complicated, but it's a way of managing your documents, so it's useful from that point of view, or just using the visualization element. But chances are that you're probably going to, the larger you are, you're probably going to need professional services, whether that's ourselves or others.
So you mentioned the visualization element. What is that exactly?
So there's three visual, you build your data map through the guided tool, and there's three waves to visualize your data, which I'm really passionate about because people are not, they're blinded sometimes by data because they're not seeing it as a real thing. So making it more tangible is really important. So you're seeing it as an assessing and understanding the gaps, legal basis and so forth. The other view is one based on data residency. So it's plotting where your data is around the globe. So if you're using a typical scenario would be using a cloud vendor that's based in the States, their data centers may be based in the States or elsewhere. So you have to visualize that as a transfer rather than just using a cloud service and not necessarily thinking about this as a transfer which is happening. So visualizing then, okay, you're transferring it to the United States, so Privacy Shield becomes relevant. And have you signed the data processing agreement, so, or is there a gap there? So the visualization of the data residency. And the other view is your data life cycle. So this is key to the whole basis of GDPR is about understanding the relationship between the data subject, the data processor and the data controller. And this is something which has flummoxed a lot of people.
Yeah.
So it helps you visualize those roles and the transfers that are happening and making sure that you're, you know, capturing consent, got the data processing agreement signed and so forth. So beyond GDPR, it's about then making sure you're doing the right thing to the data subject. And then also understanding that there's other legislation which comes into play, not only GDPR.
That's actually interesting because a lot of startups will, rather than build, they'll buy services from cloud providers that they'll be using, whatever it's Freshdesk, Zendesk, those kinds of things. And they obviously all are, not that many of them are the UK based, they're all over the place. So I would suspect that a lot of startups would really need this early on, because if they're using a kind of a meshwork or patchwork of different SaaS providers, their data could be all over the place.
That's right. They, you know, they're and often they'll be the ones that are, you know, keen to try all the different services that are out there and get excited and sometimes sign up for a lot of stuff and have less control over things like shadow IT. So they might, so in doing an audit, whether you're using Tracer or professional services, you're going to find lots of room for optimization. So that's the benefit of an audit, not just compliance, but you usually find, oh, hang on, I've got 10 things doing the same thing because I just got excited. So that's one aspect of it. But yeah, you might have not read all the terms and conditions and understand that there could be risks or there could be clauses which within there that say actually we'll transfer it anywhere across the globe. So
is this a big time consuming process getting up and set up on Trace, or can it be done fairly quickly? Obviously it does depend on if you know what you're doing, as in like you know where your data is, but mm-hmm. How does the guided process work? Do people kind of find, are they finding things that they didn't realize that, oh, actually there's something in a place that we didn't realize that there was data?
Yeah, it's sort of, the whole process is visual and engaging and as simple as possible. So you're effectively populating your virtual business. So it's going into each function and you're getting that. So that's why the video and the guided content is so important. But there's also a collaborative nature. So you can, you know, then go and export to have a conversation with someone in IT or someone in marketing who might know. So it's designed to be bite-sized and stop and start. So you do a bit and then you can go back to it and build up and build up. For some businesses like dental practices, it's actually very straightforward, doesn't take a whole heap of time. But depending on the complexity you're mentioning, you know, fintechs, for example, they might have lots of different services, so it's going to take longer. But what I really like working with newer businesses because you can leapfrog, so you can get a handle on this. You're not, you know, you're dealing with you're gonna have a look at lots of cloud services, but you don't necessarily have all the legacy and the different departments. So once you get a handle on it, then you can embrace it and then really begin to dial it up as part of your brand and customer messaging, and then just change or, you know, course correct any behavior in the business. So then you're going to be ahead of the legacy businesses.
So if there's a listener out there that wants to engage with you, how do they go about doing it?
So come find me on LinkedIn, Saoirse Lorimer on LinkedIn, and the website for Trace is trace.ventures. So just get in touch, whether it's the software or the professional services, open to conversations.
And what's the process then once they get in touch? How do you kick off?
So there's an email process sign up for those who are, you know, want to trial the software or use that. In terms of the professional services, usually schedule a call, kick things off with understanding about what the need is. So some people are looking for training, some people are looking for a full audit, or just the people that are just, can you have a look at what we've done and just be the expert who just double checks it and sends checks. So I take a very tailored and bespoke approach to the services. And there'll be times when someone's looking for a deep cybersecurity expert and I can say, well, refer you on to someone in my trusted network. So I'm multidisciplinary across some key areas of digital data and privacy, it's a very complicated subject, and so there's areas deep into information security that I would pass on to someone there. So
So you mentioned that the first iteration of Trace is obviously compliance. What's the next? What does the future hold?
So I'm really passionate about transparency and data residency. So I think I would observe that some of the cloud services are not necessarily being transparent enough about where data is hosted, and you know, that matters for keeping compliance. So there's a lot more in terms of actually looking at understanding more quickly where is data hosted and using transparency there. So data, passionate about data residency, passionate about data science and using then what we get from Trace Comply to understand where more predictive compliance and predictive showing the risks, and then a more integrated software, so it can integrate into your systems and understand where the data is and be trained on finding that to make sure it's protected. So in other words, reducing the frictions so it's easier.
So we've talked obviously a lot about Trace. Talk about the journey that you had setting up Trace. So obviously you mentioned that you're the digital agency before and then moved into corporate world. What made you decide to become a poor, starving entrepreneur working in the space of GDPR, which is not necessarily the sexiest thing?
I hated getting paid in a comfortable wage. I love insecurity. To be honest, the looming approach of turning 40 and a big life stage was a good trigger for me, because I knew I wasn't a corporate through and through, so I'd been there enough. It was a really good, a hell of a good experience. I got to work in different parts of the business in a really interesting time, but I fundamentally knew deep down that I was supposed to be doing something different. And I'm really passionate about that whole design process of how do you take something that's really dry and dull and actually can we do something really different and disruptive here? So I think it was the trigger of turning 40, and kind of a sense of there's only so much time that you have for the stuff that you want to do.
So, I mean, how did you begin? And what were your first steps? What question I'm asking really is, what are the challenges you faced setting this up?
So I, in terms of getting started, I like putting the customer at the heart of everything. So I just, getting started, I believe it's my approach of doing the consultancy first, and working with clients and doing projects and delivering masterclasses and then drawing data maps on whiteboards and then codifying that into software. That works for me. Because I can visualize, I can keep all that in my head when you're thinking about how the software works, and I put the customer at the heart of it. It's not going to work for everyone. It takes longer, but that just enabled me to kind of get started. But obviously, I had a very clear idea before I made the leap.
When you were working and advising different businesses, you saw that common theme running through it, and there were certain key bits that you were doing every day that you could know that could be repeated and then put into a platform. That's
correct. Yeah. So in drawing out, taking one example, I would draw data subject, draw its little picture, data processor, data controller. You draw that on a whiteboard, and then you would literally see the faces around the room, whether I was doing training or consultancy, of light bulb moment. So light bulb moment was, so there's other software like Visio or versions that you can begin to create that flow map yourself, but I thought, well, I want the software to do that for them, And then show them that visualization. Because I don't think, even if you're, I think many people in this space, even if you understand it quite well, can necessarily start to draw a flow diagram. So actually just showing that from the questions that you've answered. So that was one example. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So then obviously, you know, you're part of the Scottish ecosystem. How much support have you seen in Scotland with your business?
I feel incredibly supported. And I think one of the, you mentioned about the challenges, there are many challenges. One is that it's, you know, it's hard and it can be lonely and you're on your own and you know you might be desperate to have a co-founder and but you might not have been lucky enough to find that right person. So so to have a sense of a team around you is really important. And even though I'm a sole founder, I feel like I'm part of a team now. And it is a team effort. So I feel incredibly supported, but you have to go out there and ask for the help and tap into it and proactively find it. In Scotland, it's an amazing ecosystem. It's very cohesive, but sometimes there's a little bit of noise that you have to navigate through to find it and then seek it out and then build that community and it will come back to you. So it would take a little bit of effort. You can't necessarily expect that you're going to start up and suddenly people are going to knock on your door and offer you the help.
Actually, this question, how long has your journey been from leaving, you know, your job to actually launching the platform?
So a year and a half, so we're just imminently launching, but and I've been working that whole time. So I've been in professional services and the software are in unison together. So yeah, it probably takes longer than I thought, but
it's actually quite short,
but that's I think anyone who starts, it's probably going to be unrealistic in terms of what you can do in the first year. But at the same time, there is a need for urgency and to get to work in that iterative way. If you work the speed of a large corporate, it's not going to happen at all.
Yeah, I guess that's why you're not working in a large corporate,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you can move, make your own decisions and actually move much quicker. So, I mean, going back to the challenges, did you, obviously, the additional co-founder is quite a big one. I've been talking to other people about that and whether they should have someone else. But I think someone was telling me the statistic that out of all the you know, unicorn startups, 65% of them had a single founder. So you're well on course to becoming a billionaire. But I mean, what other challenges do you face? I mean, how, obviously when you're working and you're trying to develop the product at the same time, how did you find the development piece? How did you find, you know, finding the right people to do the the jobs? Because obviously you can't do everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do have good people around me now, but it took me a little bit of time to delegate. And this is one of the things that you'll probably get told is to delegate, delegate, delegate. And that is important because you feel like you've got to do it all at first. And that certainly slows you down. However, if you just delegate from day one, you might make the wrong decisions of who you're delegating to. So sometimes you have to figure out how you're doing it by getting your hands dirty and doing the thing, whatever it is, whether that's accounts or whether that's the marketing, whatever piece it is, and then delegate. So you're making sure that you're clear on what are you delegating and to who and who's trusted and who can you work with. I think in terms of that sense of getting your team or your virtual team or your partners in your business together, finding out people obviously who you can trust, but that may take time. Before that, you can have a good communication with, that you get each other. We all have those people where you just seem to be speaking a different language, yeah. And that's a problem. So if you can communicate and get that flow going, then things start to happen very quickly, very, very quickly. When I compare it to when I was working digital agency side, I mean, you're interpreting client requirements to developers and designers. There's layers and miscommunication that happen there, but when you know exactly what you want, and you have someone who gets that, then things can happen very rapidly, and that's really exciting.
I think delegation is actually a very important point. I remember early in my career, the emphasizing that delegation is key, but a lot of people are very bad at it, and because they can't let go. Or again, as they said, you say they delegate to the wrong people. But I think if you're looking at non-core activities, so things that aren't going to push your business forward, so again, accounting, IT obviously will do, but there are certain parts of IT that you can also farm out, I think. Then it leaves you the brain power to, it frees you up to do the real the core aspect, which would be either fundraising, pitching, going out and getting customers, etc. So I think that's a really important point that I don't think I've touched on in a podcast before. There's a quote on your website that says you made GDPR fun. How did you do that?
So that particular quote came from a lady who runs a creative agency. They're part of a global network. So we did some work, we did some training with the team. So marketing agency, you know, typically were kind of eye rolling and sort of feeling this got slight glazed over look when we said we're going to talk about GDPR, we're going to do compliance for a whole day. So I think my experience of having worked in marketing digital agencies, I knew that how to kind of position that. So I always think about context, and that's why I take a very personal approach to any training I do. So I just really focus in that situation on bringing something like the GDPR to life through examples, being interactive, and you know, really lots of exercises that brought it into focus of that actually this is not just a regulation. This is about how, you know, you communicate. This is how you deal with customers. This is how you think about human focused design, as I talked about. So there's a fine line with fun. I guess it probably should never be fun and silly,
no.
But fun in terms of it can certainly be engaging and stimulating and interesting.
Have you built that aspect into the platform?
Yeah, I took a lot of feedback about. From people saying, you know, when I'm looking at early versions and prototypes, I did a lot of feedback and thanks to all the people that have given me feedback. But they were like, this is going to come to life. It only works if you're there. You know, we want almost you there with the software. So I sort of thought about how you can bring that to life through not actually physically being there because you can't necessarily afford to always do that. But then how can you replicate that sense of guidance through content?
Oh, cool. So, closing question. If you go back 20 years in time and give advice to your younger self, what would that be?
So, I'm quite happy. There's been times when I thought, should I have done this years ago? There's certainly those moments. And I think that's going to be right for certain people. And I think it's brilliant, the growth that people, you know, that individuals I meet that have gone straight from uni and building a business, I think that's totally awesome. But for me, the route that I went down agency when I was 20, I was out in Japan, doing this at this time in my life is totally right. So I would say keep doing what you're doing. and also, I think it's one of the things, if I think about, you know, women in their 20s or younger girls, is like, that I was always a geek at school, and that's okay. And I think it's really cool if we can encourage that kind of geekness of whether it's you're really into technology or you're really into science, whatever it is, if you can really encourage that to be, it's okay. But it also doesn't mean that you're purely a geek. You might also be super creative too, or super business focused.
Cool. Well, thanks for that. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much. Absolute pleasure.